$1 million homes. That's the average single-family home price twice this year so far in Kauai. And here on Oahu, we are gaining ground with the price tag hitting $950,000, according to the last figures released by the Honolulu Board of Realtors. Remember when TZ Economics' Paul Brubaker warned of this, and many thought, it's a ways off into the future. Well, guess what? It's 2021. It's later than you think. Here's Paul Brubaker speaking frankly about Hawaii's expectations and the scarring of our economy.
There are two issues. One is actually kind of a deep one, that people actually don't look that far out into the future. It's kind of a disturbing one because, you know, first of all, we all drive around on roads and through tunnels and live in buildings that people had the foresight to build in 1958 or something, when they were actually thinking about it. They'd just come through a war, and they were thinking about how great it was to be alive and what the future could bring. So there's that part of it. But then there's another part of it, which I think is even more important than just the, you know, sheer home price appreciation story, which is that we get hung up on these artificial boundaries. And as Dr. Evil would say, $1 million, for some reason, is, you know, it's just like stuck in our heads as this threshold that at which something happens or you need to make like $999,999. It does not have the same impact as $1 million. And where that shows up is not just in this conversation where we all take note of the fact that it's not 917,000, it's last year or whatever it was, 865, that it's suddenly $1 million, which we do need to come back to. It's the fact that the threshold effect makes it notable, and it causes economic policy to be distorted. So, for example, the city council many years ago adopted a property tax threshold, which at the time when they asked us, we suggested if they were going to do it, which maybe wasn't advisable, but if they were going to, that they would never pick an arbitrary threshold like $1 million or $1 million and $1.380. They would pick a fixed quantile of the distribution of home prices, like the top 5% or the top 10% or whatever it was that they thought they were shooting for, because over time, as valuations rise, the top 5% becomes the top 10%, and then, you know, you wake up one day and it's the top 30%, and if the median is $1 million, that means half the homes are valued at more than $1 million, and whatever thought you were doing to tax the top 5% suddenly just became half of all homes, which surely wasn't the original intent. So this is interesting from a number of perspectives, but the one that I think that's actually happening here, which is just regular appreciation turbo supercharged by the COVID anomaly.
Right, and I think that's the thing, right? We were all afraid that we were going to get pushed over a fiscal cliff, you know, with COVID. And then I guess it's just the reality where we've seen, you know, we watched Kauai's numbers hit $1 million twice already. And now here on Oahu, we're approaching that.
It is important to remember that for 65,000 plus or minus 5,000 persons who are no longer employed in Hawaii, there was a fiscal cliff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
But to get to your question, I think it is important to drill down and understand what's really going on underneath the surface, because it's not just garden variety appreciation. But it's also not, this is not the Japan bubble of the late 1980s. This is not the subprime bubble of the early 2000s. This is an idiosyncratic event associated with the disruption, some of it unanticipated, but much of it in retrospective, kind of obvious, that accompanied the COVID event and the behavioral changes that it engendered. So, for example, the reason prices on Kauai or St. Maui for single-family homes are rocketing the way they are aren't because of the customary sort of bubblicious housing cycle factors at work. There's no surge of offshore investors like the Japanese in the 1980s or like the Californian second home buyers in the early 2000s, but there is a surge of investors, and it's essentially, you can think of them as remote workers, or call them dot-com refugees, if you will. These are people who, having found, and more importantly, their employers having found, that they are at least as productive working from home or working remotely as they were working in a conventional workplace, that it really doesn't matter where they live if they can get the work done. And places that are attractive in which to live, which no longer require a commute to a workplace in another location, in another state, or across the ocean, are seeing those impacts. So that's what's happening on Kauai. That's what's happening on Maui, right? That's what's happening in Idaho. And in, I mean, top four states for population increase last year, Idaho, Arizona, Utah, and Nevada, in no particular order, essentially people moving from the West Coast to the Intermountain West because they can keep their jobs, but they can go live somewhere outside the urban environments in which they used to have to live and still participate, you know, in the economy productively. Same thing's happening outside, you know, out of Manhattan, where, you know, there's a whole cohort of people that have moved to the suburbs or the exurbs or to Zoom towns in rural America. And then there's another cohort of people that are moving in. Just remember, every time there's a seller for, say, a midtown Manhattan condo, there is a buyer. And the same is true on Kauai, where home prices are going up. It just means that the people buying are willing to pay more than the people who were previously living there.
We're also seeing, you know, the vacation rental market bounce back.
Absolutely. And by the way, in case anybody in the tourism complex didn't get that newsflash or didn't get that memo, we've been pretty sure, and we have had reason to believe for some time, that the rank hierarchy in terms of tourism resilience was vacation rentals the most resilient, timeshares previously the number one most resilient, but now eclipsed by vacation rentals, more resilient in turn than condos, which in turn are more resilient than hotels. That is, people come back and, you know, hotels have implicit in the idea of a short-term rental is optionality, right? I can put the reservation back to the hotel without penalty. Whereas timeshare travelers historically are highly motivated to take advantage of the interval that they've already acquired.
I have been seeing a number of foreclosures in the paper, in the public notices, so I'm not really sure what's happening.
Well, okay, there's two different things. One is the city, I mean, call it bad timing or bad judgment, but evidently not knowing that the pandemic was around the corner, the city and county of Honolulu decided to double down on its enforcement of a straight-up ban from 30 years ago, right, of prohibition of undocumented vacation rentals going back to 1989. So in 2019, they decided we're going to ramp up the enforcement, we're going to increase the credibility of enforcement and deter and actually induce people to exit and sell and dump their properties. So what we're talking about in the single family market is not actually happening or hadn't been happening until just recently in the condo market at all on Oahu, because there was a fire sale going on in the condo market, particularly down, you know, in Waikiki and whatnot, as condos previously in the vacation rental pool, but evidently illegally or previously without credible threat of enforcement, essentially being sold in a big portfolio reallocation. On the neighbor island, where each of the destinations has made an accommodation, no pun intended, enabling vacation rentals to operate in some form or another, the demand increase you're seeing in all cases in favor of vacation rentals is partly a reflection of their safe haven status as detached dwellings in many cases, particularly on the neighbor island.
I don't know if the foreclosures in the timeshare market, you know, what's driving that, if it's just people couldn't get over here and then just stop paying. But, you know, there's a lot of things at play. You know, the
city. It's a swirling maelstrom of factors at work. Another one, for example, is that there has been a lot of forbearance in mortgage lending that has actually deferred the resolution process, such as foreclosure, which ordinarily would have accompanied a massive economic shock of the sort represented by last year's recession. So we just haven't seen the fallout in some cases, and to the extent we're seeing numbers in the foreclosure data that suggest something's afoot, you know, there could be more to come because we've actually deferred a lot of that catastrophic realization of financial risk.
That was part of a conversation we had with economist Paul Brubaker with TZ Economics. We'll hear more about what he has to say about tourism and the crossroads we're at as we try and recover from this health and economic crisis.
Support for HPR comes from the Friends of Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge, a nonprofit devoted to supporting the Hakalau Refuge and conserving the unique flora and fauna of Hawaii Island. More on helping at friendsofhakalauforest.org.
This is The Conversation on HPR1. Disruption, disruption, disruption. That is what we've been living with for the past year since the pandemic triggered a shutdown of our economy. So how do we move through this recovery phase? Are our goals to make us less reliant on tourism unrealistic? Economist Paul Brubaker doesn't hold back on his thoughts about what we've failed to do, not just through this pandemic, but long before this health and economic crisis. Once we hit the million-dollar mark for homes here on Oahu, will we see even more people leave our shores? We pick up our conversation where we left off, talking about tourism. What do you think is going to happen with tourism? You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, a vaccine passport, but some places are going thumbs down on a passport. You know, people in Texas and maybe Florida. So does that mean they don't come here?
And yeah.
What's your take on that?
Yeah, they can all stay at home. People from Texas and Florida, I mean, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry, when I was a kid and I traveled the world with my family, and I'm talking about the 1950s and 1960s, I distinctly remember that we traveled with a passport and our yellow World Health Organization vaccination document, and we presented both upon arrival. People obviously have forgotten what it's like to live in a world where infectious disease takes one of every seven children in a family. That's how life was 100 years ago. It's the first stage of grief. They're in denial that they actually live in that world where 600, 700,000 Americans will be dead by the end of this summer because of a novel coronavirus, at the very moment that they're running around saying, see, I didn't get it. It wasn't that bad. So, yeah, they can all stay at home. Y'all can stay in Florida.
Okay. You know, on another note, walking through Waikiki and seeing the tourists rebound, but is it the kind of tourist that we want? I don't know. I mean, we don't see enough of the visitors from Japan yet. I don't know what's happening with duty-free, you know, the Galleria over there. There's still a lot of shops that are pretty empty because they don't have customers?
Honestly, I'm going to have to just pass on any question that contains the phrase, are they the tourists we want? I remember this distinctly after Hurricane Iniki. The version of it there was Mayor, bless her heart, Angie, I'm not picking on you, but Mayor Marianne Kusaka and I had this conversation then, and we've had it for 20 years. 25 years. After the hurricane, nobody wanted to replace the hotels that were blown up by the hurricane. They wanted to rebuild in the form of timeshare, because then if you rebuild where there had been a hotel, a timeshare, then you don't actually own the building. And that means you don't own the next hurricane, right? The timeshare owners own it. You operate it and you make money. And as we know now in retrospect, 25 years later, they tend to be travelers that follow through on their commitments and don't cancel. So it's a more resilient market. But the point of debate 25 years ago was that, sorry, Auntie, we kind of don't get a choice. The choice is between timeshare and nothing. It's not a choice between timeshare and hotel. Right now we're kind of in the same situation, because right now the choice is between wackadoodles from the Dakotas and Texas and Florida that don't wear masks and zero, because people from Japan won't come to America. Because America is too stupid to be a place anybody would want to travel to right now. It's not that we won't let them come here. They don't want to come here. Because America is where the dumb people live.
Well, I guess, so you're saying we shouldn't be picky. It's either tourists or no tourists, right? Be grateful for what we have.
It's either mainland guys or nothing. Because people from places like East Asia, where they actually contain the novel coronavirus and behave in a manner that is designed to preempt other people from being infected, why would they go to a country, the United States of America, where people don't give a crap about whether other people get sick? All they care about is whether they're going to get sick.
Well, we've just been hearing for some time now about resetting the tourist industry and trying to...
But my point is, it's not like an engineer. You don't get to twist the dials around and choose who comes here. We've been hearing for 30 years. That all we need is higher spending visitors. How's that going, bro? right? More visitors, not more dollars. Was that the outcome? That is the outcome, but that's not the one people intended. They thought we were going to engineer the opposite, more dollars, not more visitors. Right now, it's not realistic to presume that we get to decide who's going to come here. And thank you very much. We don't want you people here because you're from the wrong place, or you don't spend enough money, or you don't stay in the kind of lodging that we prefer that you would stay in. We just went through 6 months with essentially no tourists, and it blasted 60, 70, 80, 100,000 people out of work, some of them still to this day. And we're having an argument about who would we prefer to come back to Hawaii? Like, we should be so lucky to get anybody. Big part of the reason that America's reputation is so trash. This is the place where you go to die from COVID. In the advanced economies, America is the place you go to die. So if you think that just opening international travel is going to induce a lot of foreigners to come here, I don't think you're seeing it in the right perspective right now.
So what do we need to do to boost our economy? I mean, there's a lot of talk about technology, broadband.
Yeah, I mean, nothing prevented anybody from doing that before COVID. Nothing prevented anybody from doing that during COVID, and nothing prevents anybody from doing that now. So this whole argument that, it's not even an argument. It's kind of like bogus, that if we don't do tourism, we can do something else. It's just kind of ridiculous because we can do everything else and tourism. We just went through a year where we didn't have tourism and we got hammered. So, yeah, I agree with you. We should do all of the above. That's the answer, all of the above.
Do you think the pandemic will push people to go in the direction of diversified ag? We've only been talking about that forever.
We don't measure agriculture jobs because there's not enough of them. You know, we're going to double 0.5% of GDP. Woohoo! That's our goal, to double agricultural. Fine. Hey, knock yourself out. Hey, what prevented you from doing that before? Not a damn thing.
You sound very pessimistic, like all the great things that we were going to learn from the pandemic.
Well, no, I don't know. Does that seem pessimistic to you? We should do all of the above. To me, that's like, let's get on with it. Let's just do all of the above. What I hear today is the number is not 10 million. The number is 7 million, and it has to be the right 7 million people. It can't be those 7 million. It's got to be these 7 million over here. And we can't do telescopes, right? We can't do astronomy anymore. And we're not going to do biotechnology. So we'll do science and technology, except when it's biotechnology. And, except when it's astronomy. Let's see, is there anything else on the list? Yeah, we'll do agriculture, but it's got to be organic. That's all I hear. To me, that sounds pessimistic. And you can look at the data where the population in Hawaii has been declining for years, and it's already a referendum on how it's working out, listening to all those guys that tell me that less tourism is more, and that for some reason we should be doing things that we could have been doing all along, with which I don't disagree. But then, in addition, you're telling me that they have to be on your approved list of things to do. If there's something to be pessimistic about, is that we're already the zombie economy, that we were the zombie economy pre-COVID. We were already the living dead. We just hadn't sort of realized it yet. I'm optimistic that we can bring everything back and do more. Form your expectations from this. Tourism is on its way back to a recovery, which, without the international component, it will be 70%, 7 million out of the 10 million of what it was before. I am not convinced that this is the year that international travelers will want to come back to America in general or to Hawaii in particular, although I think Hawaii's got a better shot at it than a lot of America because we did a better job in Hawaii than the rest of America in mitigating the novel coronavirus and containing its most adverse impacts. Not as many people died per capita in Hawaii. We actually did that. But it's a long haul when the fact is that all the countries we're talking about restoring travel and tourism with are countries that did way better than we did. So, you know, to be continued. That's not a. That's probably not a 20. That's not on the 2021 list. take into account the fact that people have been leaving, residents on net have been leaving year after year after year, and the population has been declining and declining and declining, and was doing so before COVID, something much deeper is going on, which then, to bring us back to where we started, has to lead one to contemplate, you know, the extent to which the robust appreciation in residential real estate valuations, and then primarily in the detached dwelling single-family home space, not so much in urban condos, is durable. Like, how long will that last? You know, will it be over when the last remote worker has confirmation from Google or wherever they work that they can live on Kauai and work in Santa Clara County? And again, these are all things that have yet to be resolved because we're still in the middle of the actual disruption.
Dealing with disruption. That was Paul Brubaker of TZ Economics talking about expectations for our recovery from this health and economic crisis.